This is Don Bluth, and you're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers.
You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 155, Thumbelina, Coochie Coochie. This episode is brought to you by the patrons. To get your favorite movie nominated, go to rotoscopers.com/Patreon. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. We are your hosts. My name is Chelsea Robson, and I have the beautiful Morgan Stradling with me.
Yes, the fairy princess herself. I got my wings. Woo-hoo! You guys didn't know it, but I'm not little. I'm like a giant fairy with giant wings, so get ready, guys. I'm going to eat you all.
She's coming. If this is your very first time ever listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast, we are just two friends. We get together bi-weekly and we talk about some of our favorite movies, past and present, and all of them happen to be animated movies. Just happens to be that way.
Funny how it works that way, huh?
But yeah, right? We're basically here for all of those people who grew up loving animated films, but never really knowing who to talk to about them because my friends don't like them. And
I still like them, and I never grew out of them. And so we are here for you. We are your support group. We are the Rotoscopers.
This is,
and you're a Rotoscoper, too, if you like animated films and you're over the age of 12. Welcome.
This is the Animation Addicts Podcast. We are here for you.
So for our episode today, we are going to be talking about a Don Bluth favorite, maybe classic, cult classic? I don't know. We'll talk about it. Thumbelina, and that is brought to you by our patron who got to pick his movie to have us review on the show, which is Thumbelina, and that is Alex Pilgrim.
Hey.
If you want to learn how you can have your patron pick reviewed on the show, go to rotoscopers.com/Patreon. A big shout out goes to all the patrons because they really do keep this show running month to month. So thank you guys so much. And we also need to give another shout out to a new patron, Scott Coleman. Welcome to the Fairy Tribe.
We are free and independent. We go everywhere and we got to catch a Gucci all the way. We're going to teach you how to samba and to ramba and la bamba. Every number, Thumbelina, say ole! Come on the road, my little castanet. Come on the road.
One thing that Scott started many years ago is a little segment we like to call the Nerdy Couch Discussion. Basically, what this is, just picture it with me. You're up into the night with some of your best friends and just some nerdy things come around and you just happen to just talk freely about these with no judgment. Yes, this is what we're talking about. This is called the Nerdy Couch. We don't have this segment every time we do a podcast, but every once in a while we like to throw it in when we have something funny and nerdy to talk about. And this time I was looking up Thumbelina on IMDb. And you know at the very bottom where it gives you like a list of like, you might also like these movies.
Yeah.
So it had like a group of six and then you push a button and it shows you six more.
Uh-huh.
And I was going through it. I'm just, okay, I'll give you the names of the movies that came up. We had The Swan Princess. Classic movie. A Troll in Central Park. Pebble and the Penguin. All Dogs Go to Heaven. Rock-a-Doodle. Fern Gully. American Tail. Quest for Camelot. Also nice. Secret of Nim. Bartok the Magnificent. Once Upon a Forest. Can't forget that one. And Land Before Time.
So basically, this is the B and C list.
Yes.
Because it's assuming that, hey, if you like this film, you clearly don't like Disney. Because there are better things out there than Thumbelina. So here, this might be more up your alley.
Oh my gosh. It is really like the B and C of the 80s and 90s. And I was just... At the same time, I was thinking about how, you know, the Avengers on Netflix, they have the Defenders. Basically, they have like the Netflix versions of these continuation shows in the Marvel Universe. And they've like put them together and they've created this whole thing. And I was like, how funny would it be if they took like all of these B and C list movies, a lot of them being Don Bluth's. Just gonna say it and say, let's create basically our super squad of villains or heroes.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why? And you can see all the terrain around you? You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
So my question on the Nerdy Couch today is, of these movies, I want to know your top five villains and top five heroes. If we're going to create a mashup here.
Out of this particular list. So let's start with the heroes.
Okay.
We're going to have Cornelius.
Yes.
I will give you my thoughts on him later, but I thought he was quite a swashbuckling fairy prince. We're going to have, I mean, we got to have Odette.
Yeah.
I think she definitely.
Well, Derek.
This is only males?
No, it's anybody, but I also think Derek is.
Well,
it's
my list.
Okay,
cool. Top five. Well, I want him. I want them both. Well, okay.
Okay.
So like I said, we're having Cornelius.
Okay.
We're going to have Odette and Derek.
Okay.
Because I like them both that much.
I do like them both.
Then we're going to have Charlie from All Dogs Go to Heaven. And, man, none of these other ones are really that great. But let's go with Littlefoot.
Oh, Littlefoot.
Those are my heroes, okay?
Okay.
What are yours?
So for my heroes, I'm going to throw in Derek. I mean, I like Odette, but I don't know if she... I don't know.
See, I didn't have very many females, which is typical.
It's
always
typical.
You guys have that token female, but whatever.
Well, I would say...
Thumbelina definitely did not make my list.
Definitely did not.
Did I say Bartok? I feel like he should have been on my list,
too. Well, what's the girl's name from Quest for Camelot? Because she definitely makes it, I think.
Oh, what is her name?
Kaylee. Okay, so Kaylee from Quest for Camelot... She's the one that is going off and following her father's footsteps.
Oh, yes.
And she runs into her friend who's actually blind and is just as good as she is and awesome. But I still think Kaylee is my pick there. From Secret of Nim, I'm going to go with Mrs. Brisby because I think she's awesome. She's got the heart stone.
Yeah.
So kind of like Captain Planet type thing.
Mm.
Got a nice...
Indeed.
And then...
Krista.
Krista?
From Ferngully.
From Ferngully. Yeah, I think she would be good too. And I mean,
come on, this is your list. Hello, Rockadoodle.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I gotta go with Chanticleer.
Nice.
Chanticleer is my other.
Perfect. This is a perfect list for Chelsea. So now let's go with the villains. So looking at this list, we have to have Hexus.
Yes.
Gotta have him. And since I didn't really put Bartok on my list, I'm gonna put him as a villain, but he's gonna be kind of this. You know, this villain that's not really a villain who...
Like an Iago type?
Yeah, he joined up with the villains. So that could be a cool story that they could tell.
Okay.
And then you got to have Sharptooth.
Yeah.
For sure. Then from Swan Princess, you have to have Rothbart.
Yeah, I'll go with him.
And then lastly, this might come, you know, out of left field for you, but... Drake from the Pebble and the Penguin.
Oh,
just
Drake.
Because he's pretty bad. Because his voice by Tim Curry is just the best.
It's true.
Yeah. So they're my villain list.
Okay. So for my top villains, Jenner from Secret of Nim. You know, because he's got a heart of he's out to kill like Nicodemus. He does all these crazy things. So Jenner, I would definitely go with him. The devil from All Dogs Go to Heaven.
The devil's a good one. Yeah,
I mean,
you definitely want him on your evil team.
Mm-hmm. And then Sharptooth also. You can't, I mean, he's a giant dinosaur. So, I mean, the owl from Rockadoodle. I don't know. Where is he at? I think Rothbart as well. We'll throw in Rothbart because he's a good, I agree with that one. And
he'd be your over-the-top loony guy.
Uh-huh, yeah. Uh-huh. And who's the villain in Land Before... American Tail?
I don't think there's a villain. Is there?
I don't think there is. I think it's just him, like, kind of going
just
through...
Just the journey is the villain.
Yeah. Or the cats.
Yeah, cats in general, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm actually going to go with my last one is All the Cats from An American Tale.
Whoa.
All of them.
Whoa. All the cats. Nice. Well, there you have it, guys.
I actually like cats. But
in the show notes, rotoscopers.com/155. Let us know your supervillain team. We'll include a list of all of these films that were listed so that way you can know and pick from there, because it's a very, very small list. So, yeah, this is definitely the B and C team.
Save on meals, Thumbelina.
Maybe if you had high heels,
Thumbelina. If you'll stay here forever, we know that we'll never be gone.
By gum,
Thumbelina.
All right, so let's fly right into our main discussion. We are talking about Thumbelina, or Thumbelina. Like, that's really how...
It really is.
Yeah. Moving on. So some general information about the studio, about the film, whatnot, before we talk about this film. This all comes from Box Office Mojo, IMDb, Wikipedia, and of course the bonus materials where readily available. So studio, Don Bluth Entertainment, and Warner Brothers Family Entertainment was the distributor. There was a bit of problem regarding that. That's why this was pushback. And Don Bluth's studio has so many different names, mm-hmm. but one of them was going through bankruptcy, and that basically... scared the distributor, and eventually Warner Brothers picked him up and came in. But it was, like we were talking about, Don Bluth and Gary Goldman. Release date, March 30th, 1994. This film really only took them about a year and a half to produce. They finished around May 1993, but due to distributor issues, it took a while to get back. It was supposed to be a Thanksgiving 1993 release, which would have put it against The Nightmare Before Christmas, which that was such a hit. Mm. So part of me thinks that potentially they missed a bullet. But then again, maybe not, because it only did $11.3 million in the box office, which was based off a budget of $28 million.
Well, you know, I look at it and it's like, oh, $28 million, that's like super low. That's good. But then you look at the box office and it's like $11.3 million, also very low for the time. That's bad.
Yeah.
This is an all domestic film, so it didn't have anybody to go worldwide. So that's one of the other reasons why it hasn't done so well. You look at some of the current films, like even, for example, the Emoji Movie, which is made not a lot in domestically, but it has come around and made quite a bit foreign. Mm-hmm. And so it makes up a huge chunk of that. And so that's one of the major reasons why it didn't do so well.
Speaking of, it has done very, very well, or somewhat well, through the VHS and the home media distribution. Mm-hmm. I remember reading an interview with both of them, and they mentioned that it actually had sort of a cult status because of how well it's done. I mean, I feel like you knew somebody who had this on VHS.
Yeah.
I didn't, but I loved when I would go to someone's house and they did, because I feel like I had every single Disney movie known to man, but some of these more obscure ones, it was like, ooh, what is this? I want to watch that. And that's like Once Upon a Forest. That was one of the only movies my grandma had. So, yes. Unfortunately, on our list, our game above, that movie had no villains or no heroes picked.
No, because it was all like people.
Well, rodents and critters. Yes.
Morgan said that this could have gone against Nightmare Before Christmas, but instead it did go against The Lion King, 1994.
Came out later.
Mm-hmm. Which came, The Pagemaster. Well, I'll give you the top five ranking of the year. So the highest grossing animated films of that year were The Lion King, and then had Pompoko from Studio Ghibli.
Dragon Ball Z 10, Broly, Second Coming.
Yes, sorry. Doraemon, Nobita's Three Visionary Swordsmen, which honestly I've never heard of. So
Just keep going.
But number five, I had to keep going because I had to get to number five, The Pagemaster.
Ah, which barely... did slightly better, only $2 million more or less.
Yeah.
So, I mean, hey, not so bad, Thumbelina. It's okay.
It's okay, Thumbelina. It's okay. But I had to also remember that this was the year of the distribution of The Return of Jafar.
Oh.
So.
The game changer.
This was a game changer for Disney in general.
Well, also interesting that the same year, later this year, Troll in Central Park, which is another Bluth film. And during this time, they basically were putting, they came out in the same year, but they were done with this in 93 and then moved on very quickly to the animation side. of Troll in Central Park, and then followed by Pebble and the Penguin. So they were kind of busting these somewhat cheap movies out. And I did listen to some interviews from Gary Goldman and Don Bluth about this, because I'm like, I want to hear what they say. And there really wasn't that much available, and so I had to kind of do the find search to see if they even mentioned the word Thumbelina. About 90% of the interviews, it doesn't even get mentioned at all. But I did listen to an interview by Channel Awesome, which is Doug. You may know him from his awesome movie reviews that he does on YouTube. And he got an interview with them before they were doing their Dragon's Lair Indiegogo campaign, and he kind of Don Bluth slightly mentioned, you know, kind of the history, and he's like, yeah, you know, and I had alluded to this previously in actually I think in our Anastasia rewatch podcast that we did, saying how when it was just Secret of NIMH, it was just them, you know, so they had full creative control, and that's why the movie was so good and different and it was dark. And then when they had brought Steven Spielberg on, they mentioned that he was a great executive producer because he really only wanted approval, like he liked the concept, but he just wanted to approve like the script and the storyboards, but then he was totally hands off. But then as they started moving to these other distributors, there were significantly more cooks in the kitchen and people who didn't know how to cook and should not have been there.
Yeah.
And that is what this early 90s era is, I believe. Once Amblimation and Spielberg was kind of out, they, which is very much seen in Thumbelina. And all these films, it's based on a really, really great script. You know, you have to have a good, compelling story.
Yeah.
And I mean, this was based on the Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale. But, you know, you have to convert that to a script which is able to play for a modern audience and whatnot. And they said that the script writer left or something like that. And so he had 1 week, Don Bluth.
Oh, no.
1 week to rewrite the script in order to hit deadlines and move things along. And he's like, I'm not a script writer. Yeah. And he, you know, and I think that kind of indicates like what happened with this film is just there were dates, there were deadlines, there were people with putting their fingers in all sorts of pies, and they wouldn't. They would force them to dumb things down or make things simple. And they didn't like that because, one, if you look back at their older films, they didn't do that. And the films are so good as a result. And you look at films like this and you're just like, when we were talking about it, like, oh, Thumbelina, like just high level. When I think of, oh, I got to watch Thumbelina, it's internal groan, right? And then I watched it and I was actually somewhat surprised and happy, and we'll talk about that, but there were definitely things that were definitely groan worthy. Yes. And you can definitely see that. And I think, and they admit it, they said we needed distributors, and you know, part of coming with financiers is that they have some control because they're paying for it. But so kind of unfortunate because they've definitely had these ups and these lows in their career, and this might be some of the lows.
Yep. Yeah, we'll go with that. Well, this is definitely not one that you want to approach Don. Say, hey, I want to interview about Thumbelina. He internally, I'm sure, says no.
Yeah.
Please,
but it would
no.
be interesting. I feel like maybe since we live here where he lives, we should talk about, you know, maybe just do like an interview sequence or series on regarding each individual film and kind
that
of get like the verbal history of it from him, and just,
yeah,
you know, instead of like just like one question here and there, that'd be pretty cool if we could do a series like that. Kind of don't want to bother him currently. I know he's at the tail end of the pitch presentation and that's kind of his main thing, but hey, we're here for you, Don. If you're listening,
we
let's
are
do
here
this.
For you. We are, as everybody knows, we're big fans of Don.
Yes, indeed.
He's a good
our tagline.
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about the fairy tale. So like I said, this is based on Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale called Thumbelina or Little Tiny, which is kind of what the translation is. And another translator had given her the name Thumbelina, but she's known as Tiny. And I actually read the fairy tale, and I'll include links in the show notes where you can find this. And it's very short. You can read it in about 10 to 15 minutes. And I was very surprised. I've never actually read this one before. And how the film is very faithful to the story. So, you know, you have this woman who is cannot have or wants a child. And so, you know, she's able to have she pays a fairy like 10 coins or something for this. And so they get the little seed that they have to plant. It turns into a flower, turns into Thumbelina, and like, oh, I'm so happy. She puts her in a little walnut case for her little bed. And then, you know, off we go. Prince does not come into play at all until the very, very, very end. But then this toad, you know, is hopping by and says, "Oh, so beautiful. I want you to marry my son," and kidnaps her. So that starts that chain of events. And the son, much different than the film, he's just so either taken aback or not very smart, not very clear, but just says, "Croak, croak, croak." You know, that's all he ever says. Well, the mom talks, but not him. So
I can see that as like something that happened back in the day, and even today, like, you get some mothers out there who are like, "I don't care who you are, like, I want my son to marry you because I'm trying to be playing matchmaker here."
So they start preparing kind of like the wedding, the bedchamber for this upcoming wedding. Oh. And so they're like making everything for it. So they stick her on this lily pad in the middle of nowhere where she can't swim and she can't escape. So she's super bummed. She ends up talking to some fish and the fish feel bad for her. So they bite the bottom of the lily pad off, and then she's able to float down the river. So, you know, then later, I'm kind of glossing over a lot of these things, but she meets this beetle, which is called a cockchafer, which is basically a brown beetle found in Europe. And he's taken back by her and her beauty. And so he takes her to his friends, and then they start calling her ugly, and where's her wing? She's scrawny. And then he realizes, oh, okay. He actually like listens, gives into the peer pressure. Is like, yeah, she's ugly. Okay, never mind. See you later. And then, you know, again, winter's coming, and then she meets Mrs. Field Mouse, and you know, there, and then there's this Mr. Mole who wants to marry her, yada, yada, yada. The very end, she's able to kind of escape, and she sees this flower, and it opens up, and it's like this crystal boy, you know, and she's young. It's very much younger as depicted, maybe. She's a maiden, but in the picture, she looks like she's 10. Mm-hmm. I'm like, interesting. Yeah. But again, with the times, maybe not so out of the ordinary. She's a young maiden, probably like a mid-teenager, right? And then he's the prince. And so they get married, and then one of the wedding gifts is someone gives her dragonfly wings, and they basically sew them onto her, and they live happily ever after.
Classy.
So that is the story of Thumbelina, and it's very short. You should check it out on Clotolink. But very interested, because initially I watched the movie and then I read the film. Like, I'm sitting here and I'm looking at these different pieces, and upon initial viewing, I'm sitting here thinking, what's with the toads? Can we cut that? What's with the beetle? Can we cut that? And looking back, I'm like, oh, well, you kind of can't.
Right.
I mean, I guess you could, because look what they've done with, you know, other films. For example, I look at Frozen, which is based on a Hans Christian Andersen film. And
they totally changed that.
They totally changed it up, and it's definitely for the better.
Right.
But I do appreciate that they did try to be faithful with, you know, their little Don Bluth dazzle.
Right.
To the film, or to the movie. I did appreciate that they tried to be faithful to the story, but just added their little Don Bluth dazzle. Some things work, some things don't work.
Yeah. And I think they could have, like, for example, the beetle, they could have kept him in there, maybe just changed, I don't know, maybe it was just Gilbert Gottfried that it, like, bothered me in his role. I don't know. But it was, like, there were different parts of the characters that I'm like, who are these guys? Uh-huh. It's just like, you, like, go through and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm not a fan of any of these.
As I was reading up, there was a quote that, you know, it did not, this story was not well received, and the Danish critic said, the informal chatty style of, well, this wasn't a quote, but it said the informal chatty style of the tales and their lack of morals were considered to be inappropriate in children's literature, which I've like, you look at children's stories now and you're like, is there really a moral? Some are just like fluff, like ultimate fluff. And I loved that one fairy tale researcher, Peter. Oh, actually, these fairy tale researchers, Iona and Peter Opie, they basically said, you know, because a lot of people said this doesn't have a moral. Like, there's nothing really to be learned. But it says people are happiest with their own kind. Which, thoughts?
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, you can look at that in a lot of different ways. Like, most people would look at that and think race.
Yeah.
One thing. But that's not how I see it. I see it like, okay, I'm looking for people that I feel comfortable with, that make me feel good, that I feel like I'm on par, if not, like, equal to.
Yeah, people are looking for a home. People are looking for a family. Even place if they have those, yeah, they want a place to belong. And it's just like this podcast, the Rotoscopers or the Animation Addicts podcast. People come and they're drawn to this podcast or other podcasts on a variety of things because it's people like them with interests like them.
Right.
You know, same thing with religion. A lot of people hang out and socialize with people of their own religion because you have the same beliefs, you have common ground, and it just kind of puts you at ease. And like I'm saying, this is a variety of things. Not saying that you should only be with people. You definitely learn a lot of things by branching out. You know, I always say that in high school, I was part of the honors kids. And so, you know, I hung out with all the honors kids. So that was our like binding. But actually, if you looked at all of us, there was one kid from Germany. There's one kid from... two from the Philippines, one from Japan, one from India, one of Italian descent, you know, a few American kids. And it was just kind of this Chinese, one from China. And it was just kind of like friends from around the world. And it was so fun. And so there definitely are both sides of it. So, and with Thumbelina, she was never happy. First off, she was plucked from her home, which we'll talk about a little later. But basically plucked from... somewhere where she wasn't necessarily the same as her mother. She was small, and in the story it says that she's about half the size of a thumb. Very small. Very small. And so, you know, she's kind of, you know, had these... She's part of a family, but not really. And then she definitely gets thrown into people who are her same size, more or less, but totally different. And eventually she finds...
which goes to show that it's like just your outward appearance... does not necessarily mean you're going to get along with
him. Yes. Yeah. And eventually she finds the prince who crowns her his princess, and off you go. So let's talk about Thumbelina. You mentioned the voice of the Beetle, which is Gilbert Gottfried, but the voice of Thumbelina is Jodie Benson, who most notably is the voice of Ariel from The Little Mermaid. And I felt... I did not love her in this role. I think she felt completely unnecessary, other than the fact that they really needed someone who could sing, because she's like, they're always like, sing, Thumbelina.
I know.
So, but at the same time, she didn't feel like a copy of Ariel.
No.
They were totally different characters.
She did a good job of like doing a different voice, a different character voice to not make it Ariel.
But at the same time, I could feel that it was her, and I just didn't really connect with Thumbelina, and really would have wished they would have had somebody else, like someone else from Broadway, or, you know, because I didn't love Jodie Benson in this role.
Yeah. Not to say you don't love Jodie Benson.
I love Jodie Benson.
We love Jodie Benson.
She is a legend, a princess.
She is a Disney legend. I believe that most of the voice cast on here was cast mostly just so people could get distribution.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, we gotta take what Disney had. So they took like these people who had been really successful in Disney films, and like, let's bring them in ours. I'm like, you should have just saved your money and put that back in the animation rather than paying for these up and coming names in animation.
Right. And I understand why, just because of that. Like, distribution, they have lots of things that they look at to see, okay, do I think that I'm gonna get my money back on this? So...
the voice of Ariel must be good.
Must be good.
So I really like her design.
I do like her design. You know, I just always really liked Don Bluth's girls.
Yes.
Don Bluth's girls and just designs in general. I feel like they're kind of the rounder shapes, but like they got bigger cheekbones and
that hair.
That hair.
She had some great hair. Although Akon, which is the name of the podcast, but there's a lot of rotoscoping going on for the whole film. And that's one way that they were able to definitely cut corners and, you know, keep it under that budget as they do the live action. And they use that as reference or straight up just, I felt like sometimes it was straight up just copying, rotoscoping. But that's, again, with a low budget, you do what you got to do and you make it work.
Yeah. They did a lot of different things for animation. So for example, there's like this camera effect at the very beginning.
Oh, I saw
beginning.
That. Yes. I'm like, ooh, this is like multiplane, but not. It's with the computer.
Yeah. It's
swooping.
Like 1994, which is, you know, pre Toy Story. So they don't have, it's not like the computer was like so everywhere. But I can see that you're using it as camera effects and like swoop in. Let's see all of Paris.
Yes. I'm a bird flying. See what I see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also
they have different angles that they use a lot. So, for example, there was one moment where I feel like the mom like turns her head and they have like an upward shot of her. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I feel like I've seen that a lot in Don Bluth films. Like they have that, oh, type look. But even with all of the similarities, I still really like Don Bluth's style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed. But Thumbelina, I think she's an interesting character because she's very innocent and naive. And as a result, she really gets pushed around and taken advantage of mm-hmm. because she's just kind of grown up in this bubble. And I think it's kind of interesting that they give her this hard walnut shell bed and she comes from a flower bud. And that's kind of a symbol of the protective bubble that she's been in her entire life. So when she's pulled out of that, she really doesn't behave very smartly,
right?
You know, and she is young at the same time. So it's, she does get a tougher skin at the end, you know, where she's like, I will not marry the mole, or right. What's the point, Giacomo? She really kind of gets a little bit downtrodden, but for the most part, she's very much a gullible little maiden.
Doesn't have a lot of grit.
No, which, you know, people might say, oh, that's a horrible female character. Like, mm-hmm. but she's a product of her circumstance. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there are people that are like that, and this is telling the story of someone like that. Again, yeah. There's also the ability, or there's also, I think, what people like to do is to take the, like, where society is today culturally and kind of push that on the past.
Yeah.
But again, this is a film from 25 years ago based on a fairy tale from 200 years ago.
Right.
Things were totally different. So, you know, I'm taking this movie for what it is, and it's just, she's a character who's a product of her circumstance. Just by her nature, she's very naive and gullible, and let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really sad because she really gets passed around and just as a doll to be married off with whoever. She doesn't have control until the very end, which is really sad because it's just that others see her as a woman and say, I can do whatever I want with you.
Yeah.
You're beautiful. I'm going to kidnap you and you're going to marry my son. And there's no, okay, you can have a say in this.
Right.
Or let's talk and maybe let's go on a date. It's like, nope. This is what it is.
And I mean, it does show you a lot as far as how, what happens when you don't have that spine.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a spine, then people will take advantage of
yes.
you. And they will like try and fill in your life. Like, mm-hmm. like if you come across as the nice person mm-hmm. more than the person who knows what they're doing and has a plan and is going about their own way, people will almost always try and put their plan on you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what's happening with her. And so it's a good thing to like see, like, mm-hmm. this is what happens. Like,
yeah.
Don't be like that.
There's definitely, you know, and this kind of bothers me is that she you know, gets kidnapped. She's like, no, Cornelius, I want to marry Cornelius. I need to get back home. And she's really determined on that. And then something like flips that on her head. And it's like, oh, you're going to be a star. And she starts dancing and doing all these things.
Like, oh,
and
I never even imagined this option.
Yeah. Where and she's like, kind of gets from? Into it. And I'm just like, you are just so easily taken advantage of, you know, where uh-huh. they're able to just like cloud her judgment and kind of put the wool over her eyes. She's like, yeah, I want to be a star. I'm like, do you even know what that is?
Am I a star?
Yeah.
Do they like me?
Yes, yes, exactly. And, you know, I mean, she kind of is like this whiplash where she's like that, where she's really gullible to whatever anyone's telling her. Then on the other side, she comes back around. It's like, no, Cornelius, I got to find you. I need to go home. And then she's back and on stage with the Beatle. It's kind of jarring.
Yeah.
She's just all over the place.
Yeah, and you can see that that's what's happening to her. She's just kind of going along with it, I mm-hmm. guess so.
But that's a coping mechanism
yeah,
at the same time.
It is.
Or, and that's like a strategy survival mechanism.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But I love, speaking of marriage, wow, she just jumps right in with the prince. The prince just appears. a quick song and dance, and we'll be married in the morning.
Oh my gosh. And like goes, he's always going in for that kiss.
I know, he's a smooth, he is a player.
Like, hey.
He met her how many minutes ago, and already he's like, let's do this,
hey,
baby.
Hey, we're into the chorus, honey. That's how fast these things go.
Yes. So let's talk about Prince Cornelius. Yes, he's a player. But I like him a lot.
I do too.
He's just a really appealing character. You know he's not, you know, has these ill intentions or he's out to get her like everyone else is. Like he really seems very genuine. And also, he's attractive, he's courageous, and oh so suave.
Great with a sword.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his Bumble. He's got a nice ride.
Yes, that is the modern day equivalent of the motorcycle that the parents hate.
You can't go in the white butterfly. But when she comes along, you better believe they're in that white butterfly. Oh, that's so funny. But I really like Cornelius. I think he's also, he realizes that this is what he wants, and he's like, nope, this is what we're doing. And
there are guys and girls that are very much like that. They get their heart set on something and they will do everything they can to woo and sweep you off your feet.
Whether it's right or not, they just go.
Yes, exactly.
Like, I have my eyes set on that one. Mm-hmm. Watching this, I was like, man, you see these relationships all the time.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All the time. And so that's another reason why I didn't really dislike the movie. I was just like, man, these are real.
Well, yeah, because we were talking about Thumbelina being very naive. And of course, like, this guy who's her size, probably the first one she's ever seen in her life. He has wings. He sings her this song and dance and sweeps her off her feet. And of course, she's like, yes, I love you. But luckily for her, he's a good guy.
Right.
However, in the search for Thumbelina after she goes missing, man, he is always just off stage or one step behind. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. It makes it kind of strange because he's more or less gone the whole time, at least from Thumbelina's point of view. We see him every once in a while. He even gets frozen. And he very heroically fights off the toad and his crew at the very end. Sorry, he very heroically fights off the toad and the mole and that whole gang at the very end. But Thumbelina never sees that.
Yeah.
He just appears with a sword at the very end, like, Thumbelina, I found you. And she's like, yay. And I feel like it would have been worth so much more to have her see that for him so that she knew he was actually searching for her. Because she comes to a point in the film where she's like, he's dead.
Right.
He died. He's not coming for me. Like, no, he did. He did. And we never see that exchange between them, or at least her viewing that point. Where
as like a solidification of this, like, is reasons
this is
why I need to like this
guy.
Yeah,
exactly.
Reasons why this guy is good for me.
Not like, oh, hey, you're here too? Cool. Well, I guess we can go on that second date.
Marriage, right?
And to me, he's definitely the predecessor of Dimitri.
Ooh.
Because... like, he has some of these really good qualities. Like, he has decent qualities, but he's not fully developed, I feel.
Yeah.
But Dimitri really encompasses that all. Which, can we talk about his look?
Yeah.
Some people do not like his clothing and appearance, but
his hair is kind of weird. I'll give him that.
Was that a 90s thing?
I don't know.
It's kind of like a fade in the back, but it's like a bowl cut that's like long on the top, but not a bowl cut because it's got some pieces to it. It's very interesting. And his outfit, it's like, you're a fairy prince. Like, you got your own style and custom and tights and the tunic. It all works, okay?
Just go with it.
Yes.
But who am I to judge the fairies on their culture and their style?
Mm-hmm. You know, and you were like, oh, I just love the way that Don Bluth does his women. I'm like, oh, you gotta love those Don Bluth men.
It's true, though. Man, he's got, and he doesn't do a lot of men. Like,
a lot of
his movies are more anthropomorphic, and so you don't get to see a lot of his men. The moment you bring up Dimitri, I'm just like, the best looking.
All the girls just swoon.
It's
so
true.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to do like a wizard's duel one day about who is the better man. Not the better man, but the hero prince type, Dimitri or Eugene.
Ooh.
Because they're both.
These are good.
So get ready, Chelsea. Get your arguments ready. It's going to happen.
On both sides.
Okay, so we're jumping into the story like we were talking about. We're not going to recap, you know, scene by scene. We're just kind of talking high level about certain characters that we liked. And there's Charo as Mrs. Toad.
Most people our age and below have no idea who Charo is. And
I do not.
Charo was really big in like the 60s and 70s. Basically, she's from Spain, and she moved to the U.S. to be in Hollywood, to go to Hollywood.
Yes.
And she's actually a very accomplished classical guitar player and was very famous in Spain for that, but also wasn't making a lot of money doing it. Mm-hmm. And so she moved to the States wanting to be that. wanting to do something, and she somehow got a gig where her tagline was coochie coochie. And even in her song On the Road with Mrs. Toad, she even says that, ooh, coochie coochie, you know.
Uh-huh.
And Chara was really big. She always wore these like really voluptuous outfits and had all these fringe on the skirt, and she just was like always doing these little like señorita dance moves and everything. So basically what you see as Mrs. Toad is Charo, but
in toad form.
But she was really big during those times, and she just became like people my parents' age all definitely know who she is.
Yeah.
So my parents were like, she's coming to town and doing a concert.
Oh, no.
At this retirement
village
thing.
Oh, no.
In Arizona.
It's just getting worse.
In Arizona. It's that we have a lot of winter visitors. So
yes.
It's great weather during the wintertime. People want to get away from the snow. They come here. So there's lots of these places where they just have retirees go and hang out and do their thing for whatever, however they want to do and make friends. And there's this one where it's one of the really big ones in the area, and she was doing a concert at this location. And so my parents are like, we're going. I'm like, what? I'm going too? I don't even know who this woman is. And so we go, and I watch the show, and she has this whole section where it has like different parts of her on TV and everything, and then like a montage, and she does her little coochie coochie thing. And but then she also has a segment where she plays her classical guitar. Granted, she only does like one or two songs of her classical guitar, and most of it is like in the coochie coochie form, because most people know her for that. But she mentioned, she's like, you know what, I was living in poor circumstances in Spain, and I moved to the U.S. to do something better, and I thought, you know what, if coochie coochie gets me there, I am not above that. And that's what she did. So that is the
good for her.
That is good for her, yeah. But it's just so funny because hardly anybody knows who Charo is. And I was actually, when I was in Nashville, I was talking to a friend of mine, and he also enjoys animated movies as well. And he's like, oh, look, it's Thumbelina. I remember it's got Charo in there. And I'm like, I went to her concert. And he's like, what the heck? He's like, my age, you know?
Yeah.
And so he's just like, what? How do you go to her concert? Oh, I've been to a lot of concerts of the same. Of
you're losing your youth points, Chelsea.
I know. It was just really funny, though. So, yes, Charo.
Charo. I think she is the worst part of this film. So the film, they talk about it. This is France and whatnot. And so it's definitely set in France. And so I think to kind of differentiate, and again, there's no interviews talking about this, but I think to make the toads a little different, they made them Spaniards, you know, because they all have the Spanish accent and they're a little different than, hey, let's hire Charo, you know, to be the lead. So I say this a lot recently, and it's like, oh, tonally, it's all over the place. You got serious moments, and then you got like these crazy things for the kids or just whatnot. And I feel like if the movie was good, I would never bring that up. So it's more of results oriented thinking.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, I'm gonna criticize this because it's bad, and it's just because the results are bad. But does that make any sense? Anyways,
yeah, no.
But if it was a good movie, I would never bring it up.
Right.
But it's not a good movie.
You're trying to find the reasons why maybe
and
it wasn't a good movie.
It's the toads, the beetle, and kind of the mole. The mole's like a little more serious, but it's just so different and over the top and weird that it doesn't really match the fairy Thumbelina elements from the beginning, which are kind of like very romantic and whimsical and fun. And I kind of said this with Anastasia in our Roto rewatch that we recently had done, that instead of going kooky and crazy with Rasputin, they should have just made him scary, terrifying, and evil. And I don't know, I feel that just because, yes, you need to have her steal the sun because that's part of the story, but like, I don't know, make it scary. Or just why, like, why do we have to goof it up with this song and the coochie coochie? Like,
well,
because I'm over it.
The book itself is only 15 minutes long to read, so you gotta throw in something. So they were like, okay, who's a Spaniard we could get? And of Don Bluth's era, he knows Charo. So he gets Charo.
It just doesn't work for me.
It doesn't. I don't think it works either. I think the song itself is kind of a little too fast. Like, you don't really
it's just a a different type of song. And the same thing with the Beatle. It's more of this, like,
it's just a lot going on.
Big band sort
of. Yeah, when I think of this song, I don't think of a song that I can sing. And I think of this song as like there's so much going on and just kind of a cluster of things happening. And as a kid, you don't really, like, there's not a specific line of approach that they took with it. And I think that was one of the main reasons.
But in Aladdin, they have these big numbers that are totally different, but I think they're maybe because it's a genie that's typically doing those. Friend Like Me, Prince Ali, they don't necessarily have to be grounded in reality. But again, those songs just work because they're moving the plot along. This song, a lot of the songs in here don't really move the plot along. This one I don't think does. It's just like, sing a song.
Yeah.
It's because we're singers and that's what we do. We're going to make you a star. Okay. Anyway, let's move on. I don't want to talk about these guys. Okay. And, you know, so we have Grundle, who's the son, and I just think he's stupid.
Yeah.
Sorry. And he keeps coming back.
Yeah.
He's
one of the main pushers of the story of like,
I got to find her.
He brings in the beetle again. I'm like, get rid of the beetle.
And in the original, it's like once she moves on, she basically moves on. And it's, but I guess they needed to tie they're spending money on these people. They need to tie them together. Right. Because eventually when he's working with the beetle, it really doesn't make sense why they're working together. Like, he's kind of blackmailing because he has his wings, but it's just like, I don't know. There could have been a different way. But then all of her suitors, more or less, do end up in the same place at the end, which, you know, bringing them all back.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about the beetle.
Gilbert Gottfried. I don't really like it.
No.
I think his voice does great as Iago. And he does a good job in a lot of things that he does, but I just don't feel like this one he did a good job.
He has such a very specific voice that I feel you can't overuse it.
Yeah.
And having him just have been in Aladdin and be a really big part of Aladdin, or at least very recognizable from Aladdin, I'm okay with having a character that's really over the top and crazy, but I just didn't love him in this.
I just didn't like the character either. And every time that they brought the beetle back into the story, I like this movie points just dropped. Like, there were several times, you know, as you're going through the pacing of this movie, I felt was pretty even in a lot of the points. So at the very beginning, I felt like you did really well with the Follow Your Heart song.
With Giacomo.
Follow Your Heart. Yeah, Giacomo.
And Giacomo is, you know, the sparrow.
Yeah.
The bird is in the original.
Uh-huh.
You know, because there's that part where she meets him and they have interactions, but then later he's the dead bird in the cave, or basically in the mole's hole. So I like that they brought him back, but and I like Giacomo.
Yeah, so do I. I like his voice too. He's I like it. But there's certain parts where I just felt like, okay, I feel like I'm getting back into it. The part where everyone's like telling her that she's ugly, like that part just kind of rubbed me really wrong.
It really does, but that's part of the book.
It
which
is part
crazy.
Of the book. Yeah. And I don't like, that is what it is, but it's like, it's still,
it's just really jarring.
It really is. And you're just like, I don't like this at all. And anytime that you come back into this story just makes me not want to be watching you.
Yeah.
And that's really how my like level of this movie went. It's like, anytime he was in there, it was like, nope, going down. And then he leaves a little bit, bringing the prince. Bring it back up. Bringing it back in. Oh, yeah, you're good.
So, yeah, there's these other characters like Mr. Mole, Mrs. Fieldmouse. I don't really want to drone on about them, but let's talk about the king and queen of the fairies, King Colbert and Queen Tabitha. And the whole time I kept hearing her voice. I'm like, I know who that is. Who is that?
Mm-hmm.
And then looking at this list, I saw June Foray, who is an animation legend. She's voiced so many things. I'm like, yes, that's who she is. Which I'm very, very sad she recently died.
I know. But they're doing like a whole like special on her life and everything that she's done. Because she was, like Morgan said, an animation legend. She's like in so
everything.
Much.
Yeah.
So much. And then Kenneth Mars, who played the king, was also King Triton. So I was like, you're really trying to pull that whole Ariel thing in here.
Again,
really
it's like
the Little Mermaid.
I mean, this movie has no real ties to the Little Mermaid. It's more like a little bit of Aurora, where kind of Aurora is trapped into this, you know, in her little own world, and then a man comes and she's kind of swept, taken off her feet. And I mean, except for she had been trained much better to run away from the strangers.
Right.
But eventually gives in. And then I did see a lot of Snow White in Thumbelina, especially there were moments when she went, ah, and just like puts her hands next to her face. And I'm like, did you just like straight up steal that that scene or that pose from her? Because it looks pretty close. But, you know, where Snow White is typically more of this naive, innocent sort of princess. So, but let's jump into the music. Because
let's do this.
Chelsea, it's not an animated film if it doesn't contain music.
Which isn't totally true, but it is a lot. If it does contain music, then that's what we're focusing on.
So I'm just going to sit back right here and let Chelsea talk for the next 20 minutes.
No,
just
kidding. Great. So Don had actually gone in and asked Barry Manilow to come in and do all of the songs for three of his movies. Thumbelina was the first, followed by Pebble and the Penguin, and then the third ended up being canceled. So this film soundtrack was released for a limited time, and but is now out of print. And I was just like, oh, dang it. Why can't they put that on?
Well, the old YouTube.
Put it on Spotify. But, you know, you have Mary the Mole, which... ooh. Won a Razzie for worst original song.
I would put my vote on that too. I mean,
Mary the Mole. I felt very depressed during that song.
It's like, Dawn, where? How did we get here? How did we get here? Could we not have reigned? Were the financiers really that bad that they said we need a? She needs a song.
I guess like, we just need to fill it in, maybe. But Barry wrote it. And thing is, I really like a lot of the songs in this film. And even a lot of...
Some stick in your head.
They do.
Quite a bit.
So the first one is the intro song with Giacomo, where he comes in, if you follow your heart.
It has a good vibe.
It does have a good vibe. I like that. And then everyone knows, Thumbelina, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's all you know. After that, you have Soon. I really did not like that song as well. I mean, it was very forgettable.
Yes.
And then when they reprised it with Thumbelina's mother, once again, even more forgettable. Like, I was just like, they should just cut that whole thing out. I mean, I understand why they did it, because they have to have your I Want song in there. And but there's one point in time where they're like showing the books of the fairy prince and whatever. It's like, oh, that's the fairy prince. And she's like, I love him already, you know, just going after. And it shows this picture of a house in like a hollowed out mushroom. And I'm like, call me high maintenance, but I would really want to live in something more than a hollowed out mushroom. But then again, that's coming from her, who's in a walnut case. So, hey, she's still moving up. So Let Me Be Your Wings is the next one, where Cornelius comes in. It's the I Wonder song. I say, like, and I really like this one.
Yeah, I think it's catchy. It's great. It's still stuck in my head after having watched this earlier. And, you know, some may interpret this as being reliant on a guy, but it's totally not. She literally doesn't have wings, and he's saying, and she wants to fly. She wants to kind of go to these new heights, and he's there. And he says, I can help you. I'm willing. Just trust me. And
trust in me.
No. But, you know, like, I will bring you up. I will bring you to these new, I will bring you to these new levels.
And
it's so cute. Plus, it's just, it's like that, but slightly different.
Yeah.
But it's good.
It is good. I like it. And the more they sing it, the more I'm into it.
Yeah. One of the voicemails talked about how she grew up watching this movie, but she really doesn't like the middle. It's just the beginning and the end. And I totally agree.
Totally,
it's like
agree.
Anytime it's just fairies and romance, I'm in.
I'm in.
Everything else is like, okay. Ooh, fairies are back. Ooh, marriage.
Yeah, once every time you bring Cornelius into the picture, you're like, oh, I'm back. Oh, man. Oh, what was weird is like right after that, then that's when the frog comes in. And he's like, I love her. But she's like dancing with another guy. Dude. What a...
Yeah.
This is really going against the bro code, man.
Indeed. Indeed.
We talked a little bit about On the Road from Mrs. Toad. And it's like, meh. We know Charo. Thanks. But then it brings back with Giacomo, If You Follow Your Heart. Uh-huh. Which, once again, we like Giacomo. He's great. And then it goes into the like, "You're beautiful, baby," with the Beatles.
Your favorite.
And yeah. And I'm like, at this point in time, I'm like, this movie is really making me weary of guys in general. I'm like, all of these guys are such creepers.
These ones, yes.
I do like her outfit, though.
Yeah, when she was dressed up as a beetle, I like that.
And so I can see why they're all like, oh, she's so great. I love, look at that. Look at her scales. Look at the whole, her wings. They're so beautiful. And then she goes down to her little red and black little onesie.
Bloomers. Like,
it was so funny. I'm like, but actually, that's a cute outfit, too.
Yeah. Well, they were like, she's so scrawny. And I'm like, her legs are so scrawny. I'm like, look at her leg compared to your leg.
Yeah.
It's three times the size. Okay.
Yeah.
You're the one with the scrawny legs, mister.
Yeah. But as I said, it's like everyone telling her that she's ugly really takes it away. Like, you just don't want these. Like,
it's cringeworthy.
It is.
Indeed.
And I think that's one of those. That's a moment where I really start to feel. And especially going into the Soon reprise, I was like, I'm really actually bored right now. And can I prepare to fast forward? Fast forward, uh-huh. Please. And then you go into the field mouse. And my favorite thing about her is when she's like, she really serves up a healthy batch of guilt. When she's like, I saved your life this very day and you'd rather not? And she's like, I guess fine. Jeez. But Mary the Mole.
Pass. Next.
Dearie. Mary the Mole. That is one of those songs that I think that I'll like remember from here on out. Just when you're thinking about settling for anything in life, it's like you just think of this
it's
song.
It's true. It really is a song about settling and just ignore it. You know, you don't need love. Just
you don't need.
It's a great match. He has money.
Right.
He has it all, but he really doesn't.
Yeah. So anyway, I actually do like the song in that way, just because it's like. I think she does a funny way of singing it.
Yeah.
And it's also the whole idea of like, wow, I really need to like sing this anytime I see anybody else being like, I guess, no, it's fine. I'm being practical.
Yeah.
Like, go ahead and marry the mole. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Come on. Dream big. But at that time, when she's about to marry the mole,
yeah.
She hears his voice, Cornelius, and you're like, oh, wait, I'm back. I'm coming back.
I love this part. This is the best movie ever.
It's so funny. It's true.
I know they said people who were in charge of finance the films always wanted them to simplify. But I think actually a better way to make this movie that simplified it would have been to remove the beetle and the toads and just have the mole. Be there from like the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
And have her, you know, have him introduced at the very beginning. You know, maybe she doesn't stay with him. Eventually, she's in his quarters and kind of finally gives in.
See, I think you would have been fine to keep those other characters, just tone them down a bit.
Yeah, I don't know. The whole middle is rough.
It is,
except for the Cornelius scenes.
Anything with Cornelius, we're good. Let me be your wing.
But yeah, like you're saying, you know, she's walking down the aisle, she hears these songs, you know, she's finally given in, I'm just gonna marry the guy. But then the very end, which, hello, how thirsty are they? She's not even done walking down the aisle and the pastor's already like giving the mole his right. vows. Like, hello, let me catch up and stand for, so I can be a part of this.
Yeah.
So, you know, by the time she finally gets there, it's like, all right, it's your turn. Do you marry him?
Oh my gosh, but wait, can we go back to in her I'm marrying the mole dress and her hair?
Oh, yes. I don't understand. I made her look like a beetle or some sort of bug.
I don't know.
Bug,
that was weird.
He's not one of those. He's a mole, so.
Yeah. They just really, like, let's do something fun with her hair.
Yeah.
Like, what is this? I don't know. Oh, this is the part where we were like, oh yeah, nobody ever actually sees the fairy prince come in and save the day.
Yeah.
And she just doesn't even know that he's alive even right now.
Yeah.
And yet she's still going
there in. There was a big opportunity for her to see him and really have that realization and then see him save the day and fight for her against all these other people who had really taken advantage of her.
Yeah. And I think at the very beginning, I was not a fan of Cornelius just because I felt like he just came on really strong, fast. Like, hey, honey, we're into the third course. Like,
yep.
Let's finish this up. And I was just like, I'm not a fan of that. Why are you... Stop. Stop being so forceful like that. And then... But you see him throughout the whole film really gain the audience's trust. And so you like him still, even though you don't understand why she's still, like, why she was all gung-ho for him. Other than he's good-looking and nicer than everybody else, you know, and it's the original dream.
First guy to come around ever.
Yeah, right. And so you see that, but as the audience, you see him actually really fight, really, as you said, swashbuckling, throws a sword around, and you do come to really appreciate him and really like Cornelius. Like, you're like, yeah, I'm totally going for this guy. So, Giacomo, Thumbelina, Cornelius, Let Me Be Your Wings, Reprise. We finish with that. And then the R&B version of Barry Manilow and Deborah Byrd.
Which I never heard, because as soon as this was over, I exited out of my browser and I was done with that rental. Which I need to, because we were talking about in our Hunchback episode, someone mentioned that, oh, you forgot talking about like the worst song, which I was like, oh, yeah, they said it was the worst song, but I actually like that song. Someday when I am older. I like that song a lot, but we didn't get to talk about it. Anyway. So before we rate it, let's go in and we ask Roto Nation, which are members of our patron-only Facebook group, we ask them a question. How does Cornelius stack up to other animated leading men? Here are the responses. Jack Song says, like me, needs a fashion advisor. Chloe Weston Haver says, the hair and the tights are questionable, laughing emoji. It's been so long since I've seen this, so I had to watch a clip to remind myself. He's rather forward at the beginning, barging in, cutting up her book, and immediately trying to kiss her. Yes, I noticed that too. I'm like, oh, no respect for property.
Right.
It made a great...
He is the prince.
It did make a great little entrance, but yeah. It's like, oh, hello there. Man, most people are not liking his outfit. Jennifer says, I think he comes up a little short. Rachel Wagner says, he actually has a character arc in the film. He just has to make some choices and isn't there for the girl. Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. He's never around. And Alex Pilgrim says, his hair may be awful, but he gets points for trying. I mean, doesn't that sum this movie up?
It really does.
It looks kind of awful. It's not the fanciest animation, but it's not bad. But they do get points for trying.
Right. I do give them that. As far as rating it for me, I actually don't hate this film. And as you mentioned earlier, the idea of going back and watching this, because one time you and I tried to watch this back in like 2006. Uh-huh. And we were this because I felt like there was one scene or something that like had it like totally resurfaced itself.
Chelsea had this belief that they just reused a whole section of animation during the Let Me Be Your Wings.
I thought they did.
I don't think we ever found it.
We didn't, and that was the thing.
So that's why I wanted to watch it.
For whatever reason, there was one movie out there.
There's some movie.
Some movie out there.
I believe it.
That totally just redoes the whole thing. Like, what the heck? My brother and I were always like, no, it totally just redid it. But anyway, so I made Morgan watch this back in 2006. I was like, we're going to find this, I swear. And it didn't. But I just remember both of us being so bored through the middle and just not really liking it. Uh-huh. And so that memory came and I was like, I'm not really looking forward to watching this movie again. But I actually didn't hate it like I thought I would. Yes, I had very low expectations. And I also don't believe that this was a perfect film by any means. But it was definitely adequate. And I feel like getting rid of the Beetle, or at least lowering him down, would help it. All in all, I would give it 3 stars.
Likewise, I'm going to give it 3 stars. 2.5 for me is just really... I can't really have too many positive feelings about this film, but I feel like the beginning and the end and the character of Thumbelina and Cornelius really do it for me. And I like Thumbelina for what she is and the type of woman that she is. And I really like Cornelius for as forward. He's like the complete opposite of her.
Yeah.
Right. And they totally work together. And he's apparently not interested in any of the other matches that the parents have for him. So, hey, that very fortuitously worked out for both of them. He's a good little guy that tries to save the day. Animation is really not the best. Just looking at it, I felt that we were kind of off model at times. It felt very rotoscoped at times. But... some songs are good, some are bad. Some characters are good, some are bad. Some animation is good, some are bad. So there we go. I'm going to give it just a good solid 3 stars to tip it more on the positive than the negative side.
looking at Rotten Tomatoes, there have only been 8 critics who have given it any type of a review, and 6 have given it rotten, 2 have given it fresh, which gives it about a 25% rating. But you look at how the audience scores it, and over almost 60,000 user ratings, and they're putting it up just about where we put it, about 67%. Mm-hmm. So that's around about 60, you know.
Yeah, we're about 60%. They're about a 70-ish. So
yeah.
Slightly like it more than us, but it's in the ballpark. If I had to rewatch this again, I wouldn't be as opposed to it. Let's
yeah.
just put it that way.
Yeah.
I might just skip the middle section.
Just make sure
I
that
just need more fairy princes in my life.
Just say, okay, this is my bathroom break part.
Yeah.
Like, perfect. All right, I'll be back. Okay, we did mention a bit of the voicemails. Let's go in and actually listen to them.
Hi, Rotoscopers. This is Bethany, and this is my first time calling in. I love your guys' podcast, and I had to call in when you said you were doing Thumbelina. That was one of the few movies that I owned growing up as a kid that wasn't a Disney movie. I believe my aunt got it for me for Christmas or something. All the songs in that movie are totally still in my head, and I'm 31 years old. But I always remember like really liking the beginning and really liking the end and having to really focus and really try to get through the middle. It's not a great movie. The songs are really fun. And my brother and I used to always sing, Thumbelina, she's a funny little squirt, all the time. Super annoying. But yeah, that's the memory I have with this movie. Probably more of like a 2.5 to 3 stars. But hey, she had an awesome ponytail. So what could you say? Bye.
Good day to you, Rotoscopers. This is Danny here, and while I normally tend to speak positively about the films you discuss, today will be my very first truly negative one. I mean, no disrespect towards Don Bluth, but I hated Thumbelina. When I think of a really bad and annoying and an overly sugary animated movie, this is one that comes to mind. I despise that main character of Thumbelina on so many levels. One critic I heard once described her as a feminist's worst nightmare, and I fully agree with that statement. Not only that, I hate how dense Giacomo the Swallow is for never considering to give Thumbelina a ride on his back and take her back home. At least in the original fairy tale, she doesn't meet the swallow until the last third of the story. I also can't stand how useless the heroes are, how annoying and useless the villains are. I don't care for the songs, and I really can't stand the annoyingly bouncy, cute, and ultimately shallow romantic tone this film has. Here's hoping you never have to revisit this film, and I would recommend watching something great like Shrek instead.
Hi, Rotoscopers. It's Rachel. And I saw that you're going to be reviewing Thumbelina, and I thought I would call in a positive review because you probably won't have many. I know it gets a lot of hate out there, and it deserves most of it. It's not a great movie, but I can watch it and enjoy it. I think that it has some really nice little songs. I think Mary the Mole is a bad song, but the rest of the songs I think are sweet. And I think it's nice that you see a full journey of the character from her birth, I guess, to her becoming an adult, I guess. And I just love Jodie Benson's vocals so much. And I think that there's some really pretty songs and some pretty vocal work from her. And overall, I can watch it and enjoy it. So, not perfect, but oh well. So, anyway, that's my thoughts on Thumbelina. And it does have some nice animation, too, thrown in there. So, I don't think it's a total loss like so many do. So, there you go.
Let me be your wings. Let me be your only love. Let me take you far beyond the stars.
Let me be your wings. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Animation Addicts Podcast. If you would like to check out the show notes and all the links, go to rotoscopers.com/155. That's also where you can go to leave us your thoughts, opinions. Also, give us your top five B and C list villains and heroes. We will include that full list, which you can choose from. That'll be really fun. And then give us your review of this film and what you think about it. If you're on Twitter, give us a tweet, hashtag Animatics and hashtag Animatics 155. And our next up, our film that, and next up, we are going to be reviewing The Sword and the Stone. That is another patron pick. This time it's by Chloe. So get ready for that. We do actually have a new feature on the website at the very bottom. We have a new and improved calendar, which links to our Google calendar where we kind of track things. So you can see the, I've included the calendar for patron exclusive stuff and then for just the regular show. So you can kind of see when those will be released. We have TWIA, which drops every week. We have the Roto Rewatch, which drops at the beginning of each month. And then the Animation Addicts Podcast, which comes every 2 weeks on Friday. So you can also see what future movies we're going to do as they come. We're definitely going to include them more and more. If you'd like to leave a voicemail, go to rotoscopers.com/voicemails or give us a call, 406-646-6575. You can also support the show, like we mentioned, Patreon, rotoscopers.com/Patreon. You can start your shopping at amazon.com with rotoscopers.com/Amazon or rotoscopers.com/AmazonCA. Or if you're in a different country, go to rotoscopers.com/support for your specific Amazon link. We really, really appreciate it. And then if you'd like to listen to some of these Hans Christian Andersen fairy tales, you can do that on Audible. You get a free Audible credit if you use our link. rotoscopers.com/audible. So there you go. And also, I've not mentioned this in a while, we still have about 10 or so t-shirts. They are probably sizes extra small and then, you know, extra large, but there might be a few in between. But I'm really trying to get rid of that inventory. They are $1. Yes, that's right. $1 plus shipping. We don't make any money on the shipping. It's really just to cover the cost. But thank you guys so much who have purchased the shirts. But once these are gone, they are gone for good. So if you've always wanted one, definitely pick one up.
Awesome. Make sure to follow us on our individual locations. You can go to Morgan Stradling on Twitter, Instagram, and all other social media outlets. We also have Chelsea Robson on Twitter, website, Instagram, and all of things else as well. So once again, thank you so much for joining us. Until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers.
So there we go. We're wrapping this up. We're putting tulip flowers over it. And it's going to wither.
Wither and die? What?